I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. On the phone is Dennis Snelling, the author of Lefty O'Doul, Baseball's Forgotten Ambassador. How you doing, Dennis?
Real good. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, thank you. And you're joined here by our co-host for this segment, Rich Nye, former Cub pitcher from Walnut Creek, California. Right, Rich?
Right.
We were just talking about that. Now, Dennis, you got to stop me from just talking about Lefty O'Doul's, the restaurant, all night, because I love that place. We'll get to that in a minute, but let's tell listeners, I mean, we just talked about Curt Flood having to be in the Hall of Fame. Lefty O'Doul should be in the Hall of Fame. Let me tell me if any of these stats are wrong. The only major league player ever to hit more than 30 home runs and strike out fewer than 20 times in the same season, a lifetime .349 batting average and 970 major league games, ambassador for baseball. Just what a great idea for a book. So pick it up from there on why you decided to write about Lefty O'Doul.
Well, I'd written some on the Pacific Coast League, so I was pretty familiar with Lefty's story. And it just seemed to me kind of ridiculous that he'd been overlooked for so long. And I think part of it is his impact on Japanese baseball is probably only being felt in the last 15 years here in the United States, as more Japanese players have come over and more and the game has globalization of the game has become a bigger thing, and he really was a major start of that.
Your book says he had visited Japan more than a dozen times as a player and ambassador for the game, including the trips in 1931 and 1934. He got Babe Ruth to go along. Talk about those trips.
Well, 31 was the first time he went over with a group of Major League All-Stars. It was a goodwill tour, and he was very successful. He was the leading hitter on the tour and really fell in love with the country. He immediately came back the next year and coached college players and really took to the Japanese. The Japanese took to him. And the Japanese had wanted to get Babe Ruth over for more than a decade. And Lefty was good friends with him, so he worked it out where he convinced the Babe finally to come over to Japan in 1934 before he retired, which was something very important to the Japanese that he come before he quit playing. And he continued up until the war going over there, but of course the war intervened. And following the war was the big tour that I think is his biggest legacy in 1949, when Douglas MacArthur asked him to come over and help United States-Japanese relations, which he did, and MacArthur called it one of the greatest pieces of diplomacy anytime, anywhere.
Isn't that something? Yeah. Dr. Nye, you were talking about the Japanese players you've talked to in the past and encountered. They just talk about their experience with baseball.
Well, they're treated like royalty, actually. That's the feeling I got. The only thing they noted that was different than American baseball is that there were certain rules, and they did expect you to follow the rules completely. I mean, you got to be on time. You got to be quiet when you're supposed to be quiet. Be ready to hit when it's your time. And, you know, everything's like on a schedule.
Yeah. Why was it important, Dennis, why was Japan important to Lefty at that period of his life in the 30s?
Well, I just think he really took to them. I think he saw an opportunity. He liked people who wanted to learn. He loved teaching the game. And here was a really receptive group that really wanted to know how to play the game and learn how to play it right. And he was a person who loved people. I think he's one of those people that people energized him. He just loved going to new places, learning new things. And I think these were a situation that just played right into what fit his personality.
He was a great hitting teacher, great hitting instructor. Talk about his work with some people like Joe DiMaggio and things like that.
Well, yes. Even while he was still playing, Chuck Klein, who's in the Hall of Fame, he had a great influence on him. And when his playing days were over, he came back to San Francisco, where he's from, and was asked to tutor Joe DiMaggio in his final season. And Joe would come to him over his career, most famously in 51 World Series when he was having problems, and ask Lefty's advice. And Lefty was also a mentor for getting him ready for Major League life. It wasn't just hitting. He said, I kind of left him alone. And he just gave him some basic advice, but it was advice that he paid attention to. And then Ted Williams, he met him when he was 17 years old. He was a junior in high school when he was first playing in the Pacific Coast League. And again, Ted, it was basically, don't let anybody change what you're doing. And Ted said, if I ever get my swing out of whack, I'm going to go to Lefty. He'll fix it for me.
What kind of hitter were you, Rich Nye?
I think I was a good hitter.
I mean, something Dennis and I don't know is what it's like to face major league pitching.
Well, I have to say it can be a humiliating experience, or it can be an awful lot of fun if you get a base hit your first big league ball game, which I did. And
you remember who you got it off of?
Yeah, Al Jackson, left-handed pitcher for the Cardinals. That was my first start against the Cardinals. And I remember standing on first base and looking over at Orlando Cepeda, and the baby bull came up to my shoulder. As I was standing on the base, I was even a little bit taller. And I remember saying, Mr. Cepeda, boy, I've been a fan of yours for a long time when you were with the Giants. Because, of course, I grew up in San Francisco watching the Giants and watching him as a rookie. So it was that was an awesome experience.
Now, in Dennis Snelling's great new book, Lefty O'Doul, Baseball's Forgotten Ambassador, on University of Nebraska Press, you talk about, this is from, I think, a pamphlet he did for Louisville Slugger. The best way I can describe hitting, this is Lefty writing, is to say that it's like swinging an axe at a tree. A man who takes an axe and swings at a tree does so naturally because he has no worries about the tree doing anything to him. He is certain he's going to hit the tree, and whether he knows it or not, he could replace the axe with a bat and have a sound baseball swing. So he was about that. He was about keeping the head still. That's important, right, you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Right. And a very short stride. Shift your weight, not lunge into the ball. He was very big and always got after people who lunged at the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
And just like confidence a golf swing was the big thing.
Yeah, that's important. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
He was a scratch golfer. He was two times won the Bing Crosby Pro-Am team portion.
Wow, okay. Now,
he was a great athlete.
Take it away, Dr. Nye. I have never played golf, but you just got done playing golf. And Dr. Nye, you're going to Augusta tomorrow?
I am leaving for Augusta. Yeah. I've got tickets to a practice round, and this is my first trip there, and I can hardly wait to see Magnolia Lane.
So are there parallels there, what we just talked about with the swinging a bat and golf?
Well, I think swinging a bat is you shift your weight and you roll your wrists and release the head of the bat, for example, and what they tell you to do is you're pretty much standing almost vertical, okay? Now just take a bend at your hips and put the same swing on the little white thing that doesn't move on the ground, and if you can get the timing correctly, you're going to smack it, you know? A lot of baseball players are outstanding golfers.
Yeah. Dennis, same thing?
Yeah, I haven't played a lot of golf, but I think there are those similarities, and Lefty would point that out. I think the other piece that is true in both sports is confidence. And Lefty, as much as he taught technique, he also taught confidence. And I think that's why he was also a great pitching coach. He saved Ryan Duren's career. Larry Jansen was someone that he got to the major leagues. Because he had been a pitcher. He started out as a pitcher. So he's one of those rare people who could coach both pitchers and hitters. But one of the things that he was very much, the psychology of playing was almost as important to him, and the confidence being there was like half the battle. Certainly you had to have talent, and you had to have good technique, but confidence he felt played a large role in it as well.
He your book talks about his personality. He was so engaging. People called him the mayor. You know, he just knew everybody. Always dressed in green. He had green suits, green pants, green hats, green socks. Dennis, did he have green eyes?
No, actually, he had blue eyes.
Okay, blue eyes.
There's a lot of references to him having green eyes, but his World War One draft notice shows him having blue eyes. His registration card.
And he was born in San Francisco.
And he was actually, he was only one quarter Irish. He was actually half German, one quarter French Italian, and one quarter Irish.
And born in San Francisco?
Born in San Francisco.
So in Lefty 101, just talk about his image, his imprint on San Francisco. I mean, then maybe we can get a little bit into the restaurant, but... he's just beloved there.
I think he's still an icon there. I mean, people still remember him. I remember calling up the courthouse and looking for some records, and as soon as I mentioned Lefty O'Doul, they said, we'll drop everything and get it to you. I mean, I think the restaurant, of course, is a major thing, but he was an icon during life. I mean, talked about nobody wanted to walk down the street with him because it wasn't really a walk. It was a series of interruptions because everybody knew him. I opened the book with one of those walks, and everybody's stopping. He knows everybody. Everybody knows him, and even some Japanese businessmen see him and hail him, you know, and come over and talk to him. He loved people. He loved helping people, and of course, you know, San Francisco was his home. You know, that opening song was perfect for him.
Dr. Nye, did you ever go to Lefty O'Doul's in San Francisco?
You know something? I probably did, but I remember I met him, I think, at one of the old-timers' dinners, and I don't remember where, but I know that, again, just like the kids of today that are coming up in baseball, if you're not really into baseball history and you mention a name from the past, they go, who's that? And I probably did that a lot because I had not planned on playing professional baseball. It was just something that I kind of backed into.
Yeah. What is the status with the restaurant? I've been there a million times. You know, I think it's one of my favorite quote unquote sports bars, although they had food there. But it's closed. Give us a quick little update on the status of Lefty O'Doul's there, right across from Union Square.
So it's a landlord-tenant dispute, and they're even disputing who owns the business. The current tenant wanted some upgrades in the building. It's 100 years old, and wanted some renovations done and said, I'll pay a higher rent. Instead, the landowner said, no, we're going to take over. We want to renovate it. We're going to open it. The current tenant is looking elsewhere to open it. So they're having some battles in court over it, but the idea is that the current tenant will open it in another location somewhere in the city later this year.
Fantastic. I mean, it's got like over 400 pieces of baseball memorabilia. They had a piano bar in there. Former Mayor Willie Brown, he used to hang out there, didn't he, Dennis?
Oh, yeah. Vita Blue hangs out there quite a bit. And it's a lot of the, you know, during the World Series, I know when the Tigers were playing the Giants, a lot of the players came in. So it's become a landmark again. It went through a kind of a rough patch in the 90s, but the new owners have really brought it back over the last decade and a half.
Yeah, it's just quite a place. What is some of your other background in writing and stuff? You did the Pacific Coast League book?
Correct.
And go ahead.
Go ahead.
So it was about the old Pacific Coast League, the greatest minor league?
Right. The Pacific Coast League was really an independent league for 40 years. They wanted to become a third major league, and they signed all their own players. So when we're talking about Joe DiMaggio and Ted Williams, those being out there, those guys were actually signed by Pacific Coast League teams, not major league teams. Paul Wehner came from Harry Heilman. Earl Averill, Lefty Gomez, all of those guys were signed. They were West Coast talent, and they were signed by the West Coast teams. And those teams held on to their players. You had owners like William Wrigley, who also owned the Cubs, but he owned the Los Angeles Angels separately. Mm-hmm. You had Paul Sagan, who was big with the Crocker family. You had Emil Sick, who was a big brewer up in Seattle. You had owners who had some money and some ambition. But ultimately, there weren't enough big cities and big stadiums for them to just stick to the West Coast and become a third major league. And the major leagues was never really going to let them do that. But along the way, they set attendance records that stood for 30 or 40 years. You had really unique situations like Hollywood, where it was actually owned by a lot of the movie stars. Right. Bob Cobb of the Brown Derby owned the team. But a lot of the Humphrey Bogart, Jimmy Stewart, Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, Groucho Marx, all those who were almost every game, and usually, and they all owned a piece of the team. So it was a really unique atmosphere, very much understanding baseball as entertainment. Lefty kind of came from that tradition of understanding part of baseball as entertainment.
It's a great parallel. And,
yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then I want to talk about trying to get Lefty into the Hall of Fame. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.
Say hey,
say who,
say Willie. Say hey,
say who,
swinging at the plate. Say hey,
say who,
say Willie. That giant kid is great. Yes, he covers.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. We're with Dennis Snelling, the author of Lefty O'Doul, Baseball's Forgotten Ambassador, University of Nebraska Press, and former Cub and Woodturner now, Rich Nye. Thank you, Dan Long. Dan lets me get away with all those goofy song things. That was Chicago's own Traineers doing the Willie Mays thing. He's from San Francisco, plays out there. Dennis, do you think this book will help? Lefty should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, just for all the, like you said, baseball's forgotten ambassador. The things he did, I mean, they got the World Baseball Classic going on now. I mean, why isn't he in the Hall yet?
I think some of it is that his peak career, he really had four or five great years because he started out as a pitcher and then hurt his arm and really wasn't successful at that and finally remade himself into a hitter, but was stuck in the Coast League again because they were independent until he was 31. And so his peak years were in his 30s and then he was done. And I think also his impact, in Japan hasn't been appreciated. I mean, you have to go back. He's still considered the father of professional baseball in Japan. When he went over in 1949, by some accounts, there were 1 million people lining the street when they came through in the parade. They played before 80 and 90,000 people. Well, that's impact that people didn't see, because it was over there, and plus the players coming over so late. And I think quite often it's just about the playing career. I think sometimes baseball misses a little bit on looking at people who changed the game or made contributions in other ways. And I think if you look at it that way, he certainly deserves to be there.
His personality,
that's the thing. He is in the Japanese Baseball Hall of Fame, by the way.
Yeah,
he was inducted by the Japanese into their Hall of Fame in 2002.
Was he an amateur? Did he take pictures, too? He liked photography, didn't he? Aren't some of his pictures the ones that hung in the restaurant?
He took some of those. He took pictures pretty much wherever he went. He actually got arrested in Tokyo in 1932 for taking photos on the waterfront there. He would come back and show pictures of his travels in San Francisco quite often. He would come back afterwards and have displays.
Your book is great. I mean, not to get too geeked out, but on some of those trips, wasn't he with Mo Berg, the spy?
He was.
Was Mo taking pictures too?
Mo took pictures a couple of years later.
Yeah.
But he was not a spy at that time.
Uh-huh.
There's real question as to whether those were actually used, but he did become a spy for the forerunner of the CIA.
Yeah.
Mo did. Yeah.
But I mean, what I was going to say there is like the restaurant, he just, his personality. I mean, this is at his headstone in Dennis's book. His epitaph is written, "The man in the green suit," and his epitaph, "He was here at a good time and had a good time while he was here."
Awesome.
Isn't that something? Did you feel that? How much of that did you feel as you were researching this and getting into Lefty's life?
Well, he's a complex character.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it took me, I worked on this 3.5 years. I would say it took me 2.5 before I felt like I was really starting to understand him, because he was in so many places and did so many things and had so many phases to his life. I mean, early in his career, he didn't take his career very seriously. You had to look and realize, even though he's lackadaisical times, he's very competitive. And you'll see in the book there are several times where he really rose to the occasion, especially when he felt he'd been slighted. And so getting into those nuances of him and what made him tick took a little while.
You're, I don't want to let you go without saying this. You're assistant superintendent for a school district in Roseville, California?
Yes.
And you had a, tell me, I like the human angle. Tell me what you were doing tonight. There was a charity event?
Correct. It's called Tommy Apostolos. It's fundraising that in December we take needy children shopping in the department stores and they're given a ton of allowance. And we go along with them to buy clothes and necessities. And so this is their big fundraiser each year. So I was there tonight.
Does your background in education, did that lend itself to doing research and help your eye for doing a book like this?
I think so. I mean, certainly, you know, I think when you go into the education field, you're interested in continually learning about things. I think and Lefty was kind of a classic self-taught person. He dropped out in eighth grade of school, yet he was always wanting to learn things and find things. And I found that kind of fascinating because I could kind of relate to that, always looking for new things, understanding things, learning how things tick. I found it very interesting in that way.
That's why we have Rich Nye with us. That's been your path. I mean, we were going to talk about mountains and you're going over stuff, but you always find something new, Dr. Nye.
Yes, and you follow your passion, whatever that is, and don't be afraid to change.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Nye, Dennis, has been on our show to talk about being a veterinarian, and now you're doing woodworking, and I didn't know you played. I mean, yeah, you're not a one-trick pony.
Right. I like to think that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you guys so much. This is great. You know, it's important, Dennis, because I think you mentioned a lot of people that you go into Lefty O'Doul's in San Francisco, they get some type of fictional character. So thanks for bringing him to life in Lefty O'Doul, baseball's forgotten ambassador. How long has it been out on University of Nebraska Press?
It's been out in a soft release for a couple of weeks. The real release date is May 1st, but it is available through the press. And it's available on, I think it's available in a couple of Chicago area stores and back east in Barnes & Noble and of course, Amazon and online.